Greetings, everyone. This is Jonathan Alexander, editor of College Composition and Communication. And today we are here with David M. Grant, whose article, Writing Wakan, the Lakota Pipe as Rhetorical Object, appears in the September 2017 issue of CCC. Joining me also is editorial assistant, Jens Lloyd. David, thanks for chatting with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we always like to ask folks about how they come to the projects that they work on. So give us a sense of the backstory about Writing Wakan.
It has a fairly lengthy backstory. I actually did my master's degree at Northern Arizona University, and so I worked with Navajo students there, and I was always very much into their educational system and their structures. Navajo Community College has a really wonderful, deeply engrossing educational system based upon their philosophies. When I got to my doctoral work at Wisconsin, I was doing more environmental rhetorics, but there was a chance to study this class that went out to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation and worked with students getting out there and learning their culture and writing in order to learn culture and learn things. And so there was some of it that did come out of the dissertation, but there was also this bit in between where I didn't quite know what to do with the dissertation. I was a writing program coordinator. I was doing WPA work. So the work to get tenure and whatnot wasn't necessarily your traditional scholarship. It was the WPA work, very administrative and kind of bureaucratic stuff. But then I rotated out of that and I said, hey, you know, one of the first things I want to do is this pipe has always said to me, this whole stuff has been, that is rhetoric. That is a rhetoric that is not of the standard Western canon or culture or tradition. At the same time, it just so happened that there was a lively conversation happening, which I reference in the piece there a little bit, across indigenous rhetorics and new materialisms, you know, and these other folks that we see about looking at objects and ontology. And so I wanted to make a really productive intervention in that. And that really helped me to kind of say, much more than just, you know what, this pipe's rhetorical. It really helped me kind of, I think, ground it in a conversation that was happening and hopefully allowed me to make what it's an intervention. I hope it's a positive intervention. I started writing that up. I brought it first, Kristen Arola and myself, we had and another person whose name is escaping me, and I'm sorry to her. We presented it at 4Cs a few years ago, and then I also took it to RSA, a workshop with Alan Cushman, and a bunch of just really, really wonderful group of people who gave generous feedback on that before I sent it, you know, finally sent it to 3Cs to say, you know, here it is. And so so it's had a really long, lengthy, productive process behind it. It's been allowed to sort of seep and marinate for a bit, and really listening to other people has been important. So
yeah, absolutely, and I like how you narrate the not the stitching together, but the sort of coming together of different strains of thought within the field, but also outside the field to kind of help you think about this. What do new materialisms and what do the work of new materialisms bring to you? Do you think in your approach here?
The new materialisms, I think, it brings a sense that many of the similar kinds of questions I think are being asked, that there is a concern with, you know, with being, with the sense of, you know, it's not just a play of representations here. It really is a question of how are we living our lives, right? And how does rhetoric and writing and composition, how do these things really allow us to live lives that are more full, that are more rich and more carefully attuned to our environments, to our histories, our legacies, for both good and bad. And I think new materialisms sometimes gets cast as, oh, you're a bunch of technological geeks who are going off and, you know, you don't care about culture, and that's not fair. But on the other hand, too, there's a lot of times that I think the sort of the cultural studies legacy that we have gets kind of cast or dismissed as, oh, well, that's just kind of been shown as just a big, you know, postmodern play of representation. And I don't think that's fair either. So to bring these two together, I think in a productive way is something that I hope it draws on really on the best of what our field has to offer, as well as the best on what we certainly often most in the academy, but in education in general, have always striven to do. So
I think that's really an important intervention, because I think you're right. I think people who do work in the materialisms have sometimes been cast coming from particular backgrounds and is not invested in the typical objects of study within cultural studies. And so your piece nicely models how we can think across different theoretical strains to really enliven our sense of the rhetorics of everyday life. That's important. Jens, what are you thinking?
Well, David, as I was reading through, I mean, to this point about bringing these two things together, but also maybe kind of at times, really, I felt this great juxtaposition at times and this contrast between the two. But I'm wondering, just maybe more generally, getting back to your point about your previous experience as a writing program administrator, with this kind of scholarship, I mean, and the kind of thinking that you think, or the ways of thinking about communication that this sort of research might push you towards, how does it influence your pedagogy? How does it influence your approach to administrative work? I mean, I can just imagine C's readers picking this up in the new issue, reading it, and maybe thinking through some of those questions themselves. So I'm wondering your thoughts about how this, again, influences your pedagogy or your administrative work, if at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly there. And one of the things that I think one of the difficulties, I guess, in writing it is starting out and really positioning the reader who might not be familiar with Indigenous educational models or Indigenous ways of thinking. Because in so many ways, I mean, our colonial legacy, our settler colonialism has really just, you know, all but vanished or vanquished, you know, those things, so that, you know, folks that I'm reading now about living in the post-apocalypse world, which many people do, I mean, this is the foundation of our country. We see this in the racism, not only in Charlottesville, but we see this in the racism on, you know, pipeline building and construction and the Dakotas. I mean, there are two twin settler colonial things that impacted Native Americans, and then certainly African Americans. That's the two kind of founding moments. So you have to back up beyond all of that to really start going, okay, now maybe I'm in a place where I can actually start listening, you know? And that's a very challenging thing to do. I really wrestled with that for a very, very, very long time, to think about, you know, who am I as a white guy to come in and say anything, you know? And it really, I really have to give props to Ellen Cushman, because in one draft, you know, she even pointed out to me, I had a paragraph in there about how I was the white, straight, male, privileged, all this kind of stuff. And she's like, you know, you really seem to sort of pin yourself down like an insect specimen on display in a museum. Why would you do that? And I'm like, that's a really good question. Why would I, right? As if I continually was sort of undercutting or feeling doubtful about my own stance and my own ethos in this. And so I, you know, worked very hard to say, you know what, I do have something to say. I try to be an ally. I try to be very respectful. In the piece, I do try to show how I try to triangulate not only the book learning I get, but also, how a lot of that stuff methodologically, it can say it in a book, but it isn't really real until somebody says it out on the reservation. Right. So those kinds of things, I use, I think in writing program administration, you can use it to really talk about, well, gosh, I read this article on how they write in sociology, but have you actually sat down with a sociologist? Right. Those kinds of things I think are very helpful and very instructive, just to help build those kinds of bridges that we need, because, you know, we do get in our own little enclaves, our own little worlds, and sometimes we just need to, you know, work hard to keep those worlds open a bit.
No, that's great. The critical listening that you're talking about is important. Where does this research go for you now?
So like I said, I'm reading on Snyder Larson and some other Native American voices who are really saying, hey, look, we live in a post-apocalyptic world. Everything's sort of in tatters and shards, and we're trying to reconstruct something, and there's a burden there, but I think there's something to that that is also very decolonizing in some ways, because then there's really no place in a post-apocalyptic world where there's any purity. And so, you know, it kind of addresses the sort of the postmodern fragmentation, and really to kind of work that up as in some sort of a method that does the decolonial work, but also sort of what takes the spotlight off the colonizing and the colonizers, and really says, oh, wait a minute, here's the people who are still here. They're still, in Jared Visner's terms, they're still undergoing, you know, survivance and forming strategies for survivance. But it's not about what happened necessarily in the past. It's about their lives now, right? What's happening? It's one of the things that you know, you hear time and time again, and I know Kristen Arola and Malia Powell and Scott Lyons, they've all said, you know, Native Americans aren't vanished. We're still here. We're still participating. So I'm trying to work up a larger, longer monograph on that based upon not only this piece, but my work in Navajo country, and then some of the work I'm doing here in Iowa with the Meskwaki community, and trying to talk with them a little bit and listen to them more, and basically sort of report my findings.
It's great. It's wonderful work. We've been talking with David M. Grant, whose article, Writing Wakan, the Lakota Pipe as Rhetorical Object, appears in the September 2017 CCC. David, thanks so much for chatting with us.
Thank you. It's great.